everyone. Welcome back to the Lolly Carter Steelers podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here on DKPittsburghSports.com. Remember, you can download this podcast and all of our podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere podcasts are hosted. Rate us 5 stars with a positive comment to help us all out on the network. Joining me today again for the second time in a row is our guy, Tom Reed, on the website. Tom's filling in for Dale, who's still on vacation. He'll be back next week, so stay tuned for that. Tom just wrote a huge piece on Henry Davis, the first overall pick by the Pittsburgh Pirates in the 2021 MLB draft, the catcher, and his story growing up. So if you want to read about the newest superstar that the Pirates are looking to build, go check that out. It's at the top of our website, and you can check out all of Tom Reed's work there. Tom, first of all, how you doing, my man?
Good. Happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you. We're recording this on a Friday here. Now, Tom, I want to talk to you a bit about some serious stuff before we get back into some like football talk. Because there's been, with the developments that happened late this week, we had the incident where Dwayne Haskins, there was a police report out in Vegas that Dwayne Haskins was assaulted by his wife and that supposedly she knocked a tooth of his out. In an altercation, but the report says that he did not swing back or not initiate any of the violence in that. And this became a big topic on Thursday in the Pittsburgh sports talk world because, well, I mean, one, it's a slow news cycle. So everything that happens is going to get picked up. But two, I mean, this is Dwayne Haskins, a guy who got cut from Washington after being the 15th overall pick of the 2018 NFL draft or 2019 NFL draft, excuse me. And now he's here in Pittsburgh that he knows this is his second chance to kind of fix everything. And the initial response by a lot of people out there was, man, this guy can't stay out of trouble. This is the last straw. The Steelers should just get rid of him. And it was, I was kind of sitting there like, whoa. Is this something the Steelers should question? Absolutely. Should they look into this? Uh-huh. They should talk to their guy and say, hey, man, what's going on? We need you to keep stay out of trouble as best you can. But if the initial reports and the police report are to be believed, he was a victim here. And it sort of brings back to like, hey, domestic violence is a problem for all people in those relationships.
Yeah, it's certainly something that I'm sure, obviously, anyone wants to avoid any kind of domestic problems with a spouse or a loved one. With Dwayne, it's one of those things that he's obviously going to be coming into a quarterback battle for the backup job and a spot on the roster. And anything like this is probably not something that's not good. It's something you're going to have to be explaining to your team and your front office at a time when you really want to be all the focus on the field. And yeah. Haskins has had, beyond last year, not kind of washing out in Washington for multiple reasons, some of his own, some of them not his own. But he also had some off-field things. It was never anything like really, really, really serious. I mean, COVID breaches, of course, are serious. And I think there was something involved where he had a friend over to a hotel on the night before a game. Mm-hmm. Those are the type of things, again, it's just little things like that. This is obviously more serious. But to counter that and to go to your point, at least this is something where he wasn't the one doing the hitting. He seemed to be the one that may have been trying to calm the situation down and ended up getting punched. And it sounds like in reading this, in the police report and reading the story, that there were multiple people involved. This wasn't just him and his wife in Las Vegas. They were there for a wedding. There was some miscommunication on what they were doing that yeah. night. Some of the dudes went one way, some of the women went the other way. And then it ended up something. And then to Haskins' credit, he immediately called down the hotel security, let them know what happened. The police ended up, it sounds like, taking the wife into custody, at least briefly. So, yeah, I think it's one of those ones you look at. You can build both arguments. I think it is a good sign that at least, he wasn't involved. He wasn't the one throwing punches or hitting her. There's no, like you said, there's nothing in the police report about that. But on the other end, it's just something that, again, if you're going in with maybe your career kind of on the line here as far as getting up, trying to get a backup job after you, you know, washed out as the number 15 pick. It's not something you want to be having to explain to coaches and to GMs at the start of training camp.
No, it's certainly it's certainly something you don't want to. And I'm sure he's trying to put this behind him as fast as he can. Now, there are conflicting reports. There's supposedly a report out there where she was hit, you know, that any injuries that were done to Haskins were done in a fight with someone else and not her. And that something else was going on here and that she was, you know, kind of bumped in the middle of that altercation. But there's a lot of stuff going on there. The point is, I think that we still got to wait to see what actually comes out of this investigation and what the final word on this situation is before, you know, we pass judgment on anybody for what's going on here. But, you know, bottom line, domestic violence is a very serious issue. And in general, I mean, in the same week where, you know, Richard Sherman has his incident where he was arrested and he was first held without bail, then he was released Thursday for, you know, a really bad situation where he was, you know, threatening to kill himself. And he was obviously going through a mental episode. His wife called the police and the dispatch. I don't know, Tom, did you get to listen to that dispatch call where she goes back and forth with the dispatch and it's not really going well? And she's just saying he needs help, but please don't come here and kill him. He's not a threat to you. He's a threat to himself.
No, I didn't. But, you know, just, I mean, that you're rolling in so many different issues right now, Chris, as yeah. far as some of the things that go on in this world. You know, it's a shame. I've always liked Richard Sherman as a player. Yeah. I hope he can get better. And just his own mental health is to me more important than whether he plays football this season or anything like that. So I kind of wish him well. He's always kind of been an entertaining player, always very, very good player for many yeah. years. But yeah, that's a disturbing story. And you just, again, you know, we know this stuff goes on in the real world a lot as well. And these athletes are people too, with the same kind of problems you and I have.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that, you know, on top of being a great player, he's been an outspoken, you know, person in the public world, just about different issues, about what's going on. And the guy was a Rhodes Scholar. Like, he's a very smart person. Like, that's the thing. This guy was smart. He's had a great career. He's been a great football player, but he also seems like he's been a great person. And, you know, it shows that even guys that seem like, you know, he's a Super Bowl champion, he's a several times over millionaire, even those guys can have these kind of mental problems. And you know, I brought this up in the same segment as the Dwayne Haskins situation, because it seems like oftentimes these athletes' pain and their tough life situations often become the entertainment for some people out there. And I think that's something that we as journalists and as people that cover these sports, it helps when we're being the ones that are objective and drawing it back, like, hey, no, this isn't funny. This is a real situation that real people either got hurt or could have gotten hurt in, and something that needs to be respected and given space for these people to heal and figure out what they need to do next.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And again, you're seeing a stronger push in different from different athletes across the spectrum about mental health. You know, here in Ohio, Kevin Love, the one that won the title with the Cavs, he's been extremely outspoken over the years about the importance of mental health and trying to make sure everyone kind of takes care of themselves and is trying to help each other in these type of issues. Because again, we know this stuff goes on in every walk of life, whether it's depression or just anxiety. I mean, Chris, just this living through this last year, right? Mm-hmm. With all that's gone yeah. on, you know, with COVID and that is, you know, anxiety, I think, is probably at a high. And you want to try to find the best ways to cope with that. And I think I think what it is more than anything often is it's misunderstood. It's that some people don't think it's a real thing. Well, it is a real thing. And it's the more that we talk about it and the more that the stuff like this comes out, hopefully, you know, the people that don't believe it will see this and realize, hey, this is an excuse. This isn't for this behavior. I mean, the guy has something wrong and he needs to deal with it. And so, yeah, he shared these stories. And again, a very well-respected player, entertaining player. Again, always, just always, anything about Richard Sherman, I always gravitate to. So when I saw this the other day, it was very sad.
It's very sad. We hope that both him and his family, and Dwayne Haskins and his family, are able to find peace and resolution in their situations and move forward in their lives in positive ways that help them live more full and healthy lives. So just wanted to touch on that before we got into some more football talk. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to do just that. Tom and I talked about the top 10 quarterback situation and comparing and contrasting Ben Roethlisberger and the AFC North quarterbacks and where they've ranked on some ESPN lists that were compiled after talking to people all across the league. But the Steelers did have several guys make the top 10 in different positions. I'm going to talk about that with Tom, where those guys ranked and what that might mean for this season right after this. Back here on the Lolly Carter Steelers podcast, I'm Chris Carter here with Tom Reed filling in for Dale Lolly on DKPittsburghSports.com. Remember, you can subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, or anywhere podcasts are hosted. Be sure to rate us 5 stars with a positive comment. That stuff really helps out the entire network, not just our show, but also 66 to 87, which Tom is also on, but also the H2P podcast, the We Are podcast, DK's Daily Shots, the Pirates podcast to be named later, Young Bucks, all of the platforms, including Eddie and Chad, which they've been doing, or Matt, Chad, and Eddie, their podcast, which have just joined the platform. We're also growing more in our shows on this platform. So do stay tuned to DK Pittsburgh Sports. We got a lot of special things coming. But let's get into some football talk here. Now, I wanted to talk about life and I want to talk about reality and the seriousness of situations here with Tom. But let's talk about some of the things that have happened. Now, Tom, like I said, Ben Roethlisberger wasn't ranked among the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL in these ESPN position rankings that have come out over the past 2 weeks. But the Steelers did have 4 guys make the top 10s of their own positions. Now, the edge rushers, TJ Watt was ranked number 2 in the NFL behind Myles Garrett. When it came to interior defensive linemen, Cam Hayward was ranked number 4 behind DeForest Buckner, Chris Jones, and Aaron Donald. And Stephon Tuitt was ranked number 8 on the same list. And then the one spot where the Steelers got a guy ranking number 1 was indeed the safety position, where Minkah Fitzpatrick was ranked as the top safety in the NFL. It was also mentioned that Devin Bush was an honorable mention, and that according to the sources, the anonymous sources that Jeremy Fowler was talking to, that they were saying he would have been on the list of the top 10 if it weren't for his season-ending injury. But I mean, Tom, that says something that there's 4 guys that people across the league respect to the highest of highs in this league, and potentially 5 guys if Devin Bush plays there. I think that's a reminder that this defense does have a lot of talent on it and can make a lot of waves this year.
Yeah, there's no question that they have some high end players there, and it's just going to be the issue, of course, is trying to get the whole unit playing well, right, and not just those guys. But yeah, there's no question that there's some high end talent, and I agree. Devin Bush was having a good season when he went down against the Browns early in the year. So, that's the strength of this team. We spoke the other day when we were talking about Roethlisberger, about all the unknowns with the offensive line and what, you know, a rough season or just an uneven season could mean for the entire offense, not just the quarterback, but the rookie Najee Harris and his kind of year development. So, yeah, defensively, I can see that. I can see all those guys kind of being where they are. When it's good, it's really good. And I think one of the questions with TJ Watt, and I think everyone with the Steelers want to know, is will they be able to develop that guy on the opposite side now that Bud Dupree's gone. Mm-hmm. Highsmith, does he become in his second year become that guy? Because I don't think when Bud Dupree came into the league, I mean, yeah, he wasn't yet Bud Dupree, so to speak, right? It took him a couple years. And then when he got it going, right, he and TJ were really good together. But I do think it really helps to have somebody on that opposite side. We saw the Browns have tried to go out and get somebody opposite Myles Garrett. So the defense can't roll double teams to one side constant, to whatever side you're on. I know they move TJ around every once in a while. But I think that's going to be very important coming into this season. I don't think sacks are the end all be all, but pressures certainly are, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that's to me is always the number. You know, if you're getting a quarterback's face, if you're making him uncomfortable, if you're getting him off the spot, those are the kind of things that are very important. And I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't think that the Steelers had a sack in the playoff game.
I don't think they did either, because
I don't think they did.
That's the issue that the Steelers ran into. And this is what I was saying the week leading up to the game. They could not afford to give the Browns the chance to have a lead, because what we saw on the first play of the game, they handed them the lead. You saw that pass rush. It's nullified, because now the Browns can say, hey, we're just going to run the ball. And when we do throw the ball, it's going to be a two-step drop and bang. We're getting it out of Baker's hands really quickly, or doing things that'll make you think about the run so that you might hold up on your pass rush and keep us in that comfortable zone. What worked in their favor was when in the first game, when they beat them soundly, they got them down, and then the Browns had to play into their hands and drop back, and Baker Mayfield processed down the field. And when he had to do that, he was toast. He could not beat the defense in that manner. But when you give him a lead, when you allow him to be comfortable and to, you know, take non-risky throws and just hand the ball off, that's when the Browns were at their best. And that's when, honestly, the Steelers are at their roughest, because if they can't use their best element of their team, which is rushing the quarterback, that's when things get to be tough when it comes to applying pressure. I think it's going to be really interesting, Tom, to see how the Steelers defense continues this up, because yes, Bud Dupree was a big part of this. Alex Highsmith is going to, he's going to have to figure some things out. Now, granted, I would say that Alex Highsmith's rookie season showed more promise than Bud's rookie season, even though Bud is definitely more athletic than Alex Highsmith at that point in their careers. But if he can just become a solid number two guy, where if you leave him in one-on-one situations, he's going to hurt you. You're right. That's going to create a tough balance of situations here. I look at this team and I look at their ability to get up the court. They've led the NFL in sacks for four straight years. When it comes to pressuring the quarterback, I think it speaks for themselves. They're the best at doing it as a complete team standpoint. But again, when it's a huge part of your defense and you can't get to that because your offense, you know, either has crucial mistakes or just doesn't allow yourself to get into the team where you're playing from ahead, that does create problems there. Now, total pressures, they're still the team that creates the most pressure in the NFL. Last year, they created 213 pressures. There wasn't another team with 190 pressures all season long. And that's 35% of the passing plays that they were able to get pressure on. That's a ridiculous amount. And here's the other thing, is that we're talking about, you know, Minka Fitzpatrick is back there. Terrell Edmonds is a solid player. You know, they got to hope that their cornerback situation can stay healthy and maybe get one or two guys to step up this year, but they're not in the situation where they were like 6 or 7 years ago, where all they had were guys up front, and then they had Valentino Blake or Mike Mitchell or Sean Davis or Artie Burns as like that was their only answers at cornerback. And, you know, it was easy to beat those guys. Now they've got guys who are at least talented enough to challenge on the back end. And I think that can be the mix that helps propel this defense and keeps them in the top five conversation in the NFL.
Yeah. And Devin Bush, we mentioned the ranking and boy, when they lost him last year, I thought you can nitpick on the passing. It's always, those are always tough matchups for linebackers.
Yeah.
But they really struggled to stop the run, right? Mm-hmm. When he went out, they had trouble with the run game. So, I mean, it wasn't awful, but it's certainly for a team that is going to probably be a borderline playoff team this year. They have to get that. They have to hope that that is corrected. And I think you've written about this on the site too, about replacing Mike Hilton.
Yeah. You know,
who's it's some of these guys that they've brought in. Is there somebody that can play in that role? Because clearly, the defensive coordinator loved using him as that guy. One of the reasons they get so much pressure is just because they blitz so much. And he was one of those guys that was really good at it, really good at getting home and getting in the quarterback's faces. And they have to hope that they can find someone that does that job, because it's a rough job for small guys.
Yes,
it's not for the faint of heart. I think Hilton was an okay cover guy, but what he really specialized in was bringing pressure off the edges. And we'll see how they replace that, or how they maybe scheme that in, if they can't replace it.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Because and not just pressures, but he just generally sniffed out plays. There were so many run plays where he, even if he didn't make the tackle, he got in the spot that made it difficult for the rest for the offense to continue their concept in the run play, and that allowed for the guys behind him to come up and fill and get a cleaner look at stopping the run. Those are several things that Mike Hilton did extremely well in the box as that sort of box slot cornerback that I don't think he'll ever get enough credit for what he did in Pittsburgh. And to your point, when you look at the blitz percentage numbers, the Steelers were the number three blitz percentage. They blitzed 40.3% of the time. The only teams that blitzed more were the Miami Dolphins at 40.8% and the Baltimore Ravens at 44.1%. So a lot of blitzing. But when you look at those numbers, you're like, wow. The Steelers do live off of that. And again, when you look at these top 10 lists, three top 10 guys are there front four guys that are going to see a large percentage of the snaps. Now, something that you and I have talked about a lot, they're going to need depth. You know, I think they have some depth at defensive line. You know, they got Tyson Alulu, who they can rely on. Chris Wormley at least can help stuff the run. And then they got a bunch of young guys, where there's Isaiah Bugs or Carlos Davis or some of the new guys that they're bringing in, like Henry Mondo and things. They're going to have a good mix there. But behind Alex Highsmith and TJ Watt, they still need a guy there. There's still plenty of guys on the market. And I think they're just waiting for training camp to see what happens and see, you know, what team might, you know, what situation might work out, because no one's pulling the trigger on signing any of these guys. Yes. And Justin Houston, Melvin Ingram, guys who are still out there right now, but that depth will be a concern, because like you said, you know, it's not just about, you know, being able to bring pressure from the other side of a TJ Watt or the other, or you know, distract from Cam Hayward and Stephon to it. It's also about getting these guys rest so that when the fourth quarter's there, they're fresh. They're firing off the ball with fresh legs. Because it's not the same as when you're playing off the ball. When you're a safety, you're not having to hit somebody every single play. You're not having to charge full explosive out of a 3-point stance or a 4-point stance or a 2-point stance and engage in combat with another guy that's right in your face. That takes a toll on your body much faster than a cornerback or a safety or an off-ball linebacker. So that's why it's important to have those depth guys, and we'll see if the Steelers go get them. They certainly have the salary cap space after the DeCastro situation and only signing Trey Turner for a few million dollars.
Yeah, and it's a fairly big laundry list, because some of it is backups guys, but mm-hmm. You know, they got to get that in between now and September if we're talking about this season. And the other things you worry about, to me, he's been such a terrific player here, a terrific add, is Joe Hayden is how old now?
I believe he's 31 or 32.
Yeah, so you hope that Joe can come back and continue to play with a quality, but boy, we both know when quarterbacks go, they go, and yeah. They have to hope that Joe can continue to play at the level that he's played at since he's been here, because that's a kind of a thin. That's kind of, for me, one of the question marks in this defense is whether those cornerbacks can hold up, because again, when you blitz a lot, you better have guys that can, if not lock it down, not get beat. Get beat real bad. So we'll see where this is. To me, there's still a lot of question marks. They're kind of an in-between defense, right? They're I would call it maybe even a top-heavy defense. They've got some stars. They've got some real stars in this league, but they've also got, to me, some question marks in whether they can stop the run again and whether those corners can hold up, especially with Hayden, again, a little older. No question about his ability, but just, you know, Father Time remains undefeated except against Tom Brady, apparently.
Tom Brady doesn't seem to ever age. Like that. Wait, I feel like when Father Time does beat Tom Brady, he retires. They're like, ah, I gotcha. You know, like, finally. It took me 30 years, but I finally took you out. That guy's on another level. But, yeah, but so – and also, yeah, Joe Hayden is 32 years old. He just turned, I think, back in April. Yeah, so he's actually born like a few weeks after me. It's always crazy. I mean, like, I grew up watching football, and then, like, you know, now I'm in that age where I was with that age where, like, you know, I was the age of the rookies and the age of the slight veterans. Now I'm becoming the age of, like, the guys who are getting ready to get out the league, and I'm like, what's happening?
Wait until you start seeing the kids of the kids play. I've seen like 100 Matthews, Clay Matthews's play and those type of things. So yeah, but it's always fun to watch another generation from the same family play in the league. And you'll be watching it pretty soon, Chris.
Oh, gosh. Don't torment me. Oh man. But that's so crazy. But in all seriousness, with Joe Hayden, I'm with you that, you know, I think Joe Hayden has about two more good years in him. And I've said this years ago, the way Joe Hayden plays cornerback, he never relies on speed, never relies on, you know, being the most athletic guy on the field. He's always been, I'm in the right position. I'm challenging the right guy at the right time. And I'm able to push that. I do think he can last another year or two, but I'm with you that they need to get a backup plan in place. Maybe they'll find a guy in James Pierre. People have been hyping him up. Maybe Cameron Sutton will be, you know, the guy that can hold down and be the guy that they build around for the next few years. And maybe some of these guys at slot corner can step up like Shakur Brown. But there's also, like you said, that's a lot of maybes to deal with there. So I'm right with you. They need to figure out some other things at cornerback. But all in all, still, I think this is going to be one of the best defensive units in the NFL. And we'll see how things balance out when we start to see this team finally take the field. Training camp starts up real soon at Heinz Field. We'll be covering that here at DKPittsburghSports.com and here on the Lolly Carter Steelers podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you, Tom, for always for making time to be on the show. We always appreciate you when you could come in and talk some football here with us. Let people know where they can find you, follow you, and get more of your work.
Oh, well, always tune in to DK Pittsburgh Sports. T Reed 1919 on Twitter. That's probably the best two places.
He's a big Juju fan. 1919. That's what that is.
There you go.
But I'm Chris Carter. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Carter Critiques. You can get all my work here at DKPittsburghSports.com, as well as the Locked On Podcast Network, all the things that I do across the board. Just, you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram there. Thanks again for listening to DKPittsburghSports.com's podcast platform. Remember to subscribe to us. Remember to rate us 5 stars with a positive comment. We'll be back in your ears very soon with more right here on the network.